So, hi, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Matt. I'm standing in for Lee Sin today. So I think Lucian has already discussed the distinction between psi epistemic and psiontic models with you. Just as a very quick reminder, you can sort of draw these cartoons of the ontic states in your model versus their probabilities. And in a psiontic model, distinct quantum states correspond to probability distributions that don't overlap. And in a psi epistemic model, they correspond to ones that do overlap. So, one thing I'm not sure how much you've talked about is, most of the existing sort of fully worked out interpretations of quantum theory fall into this camp. So, you might think, well, this is just how you should understand quantum theory, and who the hell cares about these weird things? But actually, there's lots of good reasons for thinking that an interpretation like this is more likely to explain a lot of features of quantum theory. So, if I have time, I'm going to try and convince you that this is the sort of model you should be looking for. But because I'm not very good at timekeeping, I'm first going to talk about the stuff that I'm supposed to be talking about. Which is a no-go theorem for models of this form. So the way the no-go theorem works is you can sort of do a hand-wavy version of it, which is you say, well, the thing about a model of this form, a psi epistemic model, is that there are ontic states like this one. That have the property that both quantum states give them a non-zero probability. So if I call this like lambda star, then the probability of getting lambda star, if I prepare, whatever this quantum state is, psi zero, is non-zero. And the same is true for some other quantum state. This one. So, any psi epistemic model is going to have the feature that some of its ontic states are compatible with two different quantum states. If you wanted to kind of give that a more operational flavor, you could say, imagine I had some sort of device. I apologize for my artistic skills. And it had two buttons on it. If you push the first button, you get the system prepared in psi zero. If you push the other button, it's psi one. Then the thing that comes out, which in an ontological model we're imagining is described by some ontic state lambda. Doesn't tell you which button was pressed. Okay, so you look at the lambda, and from that, you can't say for sure whether psi zero or psi one is the button that was pressed.
Are the assumption about whether the psi one and psi zero are orthogonal, or
I haven't made any yet, but let's suppose that. These two were orthogonal quantum states. Well, then we kind of immediately run into a problem because so this is what a preparation device looks like. This is what a measurement device looks like. It's like got a pointer on it. So we know, according to quantum theory, that if two quantum states are orthogonal, then there's a measurement where the first outcome rules out the first state and the second outcome rules out the other state. In other words, if let's just stick to pure states. If psi zero is orthogonal to psi one, then if I just form a measurement consisting of this and maybe, you know, a few other states to make it a complete basis, then if I get this outcome, I know it wasn't this state. And if I get this outcome, I know it wasn't this state because they're orthogonal. But you know, all an ontological model of this measurement has got to work with is this lambda. So if this lambda isn't enough to tell you which button was pressed, and yet the measurement does tell you which button was pressed, you've sort of immediately got a problem. There's no way this ontological model is going to be able to reproduce this measurement. So if psi zero and psi one are orthogonal, then you just immediately get a contradiction with quantum theory if you try and represent them with overlapping distributions like this. So the kind of interesting question is, if psi zero and psi one aren't orthogonal, then can we represent them like this in our ontological model? To get at that question, you need a slightly more involved argument than this, which is to say, well, you know, I've already said that in this sort of model, whichever button you press, there's some chance that you get an ontic state like this, which doesn't tell you, which isn't enough to determine which button is pressed. So let's say that with probability P, that's what happens. So with probability P, you get a state from this region, which is the region where knowing the ontic state doesn't tell you the quantum state. Well then, you know, what happens if we build another one of these boxes? Well, there's no reason the same thing couldn't happen with this box. And in fact, if these two boxes are behaving in exactly the same way and they're behaving independently, then, you know, if you get this ambiguous lambda out of the first box with probability P, you're going to get out of the second box with probability P, and you're going to get it out of both boxes simultaneously with probability P squared. So that means when we've got our two boxes like this, there's, in this sort of model, there's going to be some probability that the ontic states of both systems taken together are not enough to tell you anything about which buttons were pressed on the preparation device. So with this probability P squared, the sort of lambda one you've got here and the lambda two you've got here are compatible with this button and this button having been pressed, this button and that button, or that button and that button. You can't really say anything about which button was pressed just by looking at those ontic states. And you know, if I write those four possibilities as quantum states, then they're like this.
So this probability P is given a equal chance that either button is pushed, or Or how is that determined?
I'm being a little bit hand-wavy about that. Let's just say that for now I'm talking about a model that's sufficiently symmetric that this probability is the same given either state. Later on, I'm going to give a much better version of this argument where this number won't actually appear. So you know, these are the four quantum states you might have prepared. And, you know, even now we've now built up these more complicated tensor product things, if psi 0 and psi 1 aren't orthogonal, then none of these are going to be orthogonal either. So, you know, we can't just from this get an immediate contradiction like we did with the orthogonal states. But what it turns out you can do is find a measurement that rules out one of the possibilities. Okay, so if I get, these are supposed to be the four ways the measurement could come out. If I get this measurement, then I know that the quantum state wasn't psi 0 tends to psi 1. Or in other words, I know that it wasn't this button and this button that were pushed. But, you know, I just argued a minute ago that in a psi epistemic model, you've got some non-zero probability of getting ontic states that are compatible with any of the buttons being pushed. So we've again got the same problem we had with orthogonal states of the ontological model not being able to reproduce this measurement. So does everyone sort of, this is just supposed to be a kind of hand-wavy version of the argument. Is that at least hand-wavingly clear? More or less, yeah. The only wrinkle is that depending on how different these two states are, it might not just be using two boxes. It might be that you need three boxes, and then you have an eight outcome measurement that rules out one of the possible strings of like which three buttons were pushed. Or if their states are even closer together, you might need four boxes and so on. But yeah, for any pair of quantum states, there exists a setup like this that can help you show that they can't be represented by this. Okay. As I said, this was a little bit hand wavy. You know, it wasn't really clear what exactly I meant by this P, yada, yada, yada. And also, I haven't actually shown that this measurement exists. I've just said that it does. I think the first thing I should do is show you that this measurement actually does exist. And the easiest way to do that is, you know, we've got these two quantum states, just pick any two quantum states, and we're interested in whether they're represented with overlapping probability distributions like that. Well, since there are only two states here, they just span a two-dimensional subspace of whatever Hilbert space we're in. So we can just focus our attention on that subspace. And then another trick we can do is is to choose a basis for that two-dimensional subspace where the states are written like that. So another way of putting that is just, I'm just saying, just choose an orientation of the block sphere such that the states are just sort of symmetric around the z-axis and lie in the xz plane. This is theta. So far all I've done is just to choose a convenient basis. And then once you've written the state in that basis, the way that you construct these sorts of measurements that rule out a state is kind of easiest to write out as a quantum circuit. So if I so now I'm already thinking about the generalization, you know, not just where you have two boxes, but where you have n boxes. So your first system, this x0 is just telling you, is the first system in the state psi 0 or in the state psi 1? And then the second system, that might be in the state psi 0, it might be in the state psi 1, so on. So in they go. And then I'm going to do gate that I'll write like that. Then Hadamard gates. And then these are measurements in the computational basis. So what I mean by this gate is just this gate here sends the all zero state to minus that. And it leaves all the other computational basis states unaffected. So I've drawn it like this because it's saying that, like, controlled on this being a zero, controlled on this being a zero, and so on, apply a minus one to the zero state of the last qubit. But it's kind of, when you view it this way, it's symmetric about the qubits. There's nothing really special about the last one. Okay, so the claim is that this is the sort of circuit you need to do this sort of thing.
Can you write down the Hadamard transformation?
Sure. So these guys are hope I can. Just this. Or in other words, it's the transformation that sends 0 to the plus state and 1 to the minus state. So in fact, the circuit as I've written here only works for a special set of states, which are the ones where so this sort of picks out a discrete set of angles between the gates. But you know, as n tends to, so for n equals 1, If you do the maths, you'll get that theta is pi on 2, which would be the case that psi 0 and psi 1 are actually orthogonal. And then as I argued earlier, you can just rule that out just using a single measurement on one system. And then as n grows, you can deal with theta getting smaller and smaller. And as theta tends to 0, n's going to tend to infinity. And if you've got, if you're interested in two states that you know don't have one of these nice theta, then the simplest thing to do is just to choose the highest, to choose a bigger theta, a smaller theta that is of this form. Okay, so if this is theta and this is n, the solutions to this for n has got to be an integer here because n is supposed to be the number of boxes. So the solutions to that are just sort of points that are getting larger and larger for smaller angles. And what I'm saying is that if you're interested in some theta that isn't at exactly one of these points, then just go to the nearest, you know, wherever you are, if you're here, there's always going to be some theta that's smaller than the one you're interested in that is of this form, right? Because these go, these tend to zero. So no matter how small theta is, there's some smaller theta that is of this form. And that's good enough because for any pair of quantum states, there's a CP map, if you know what that is, that sends them to any other pair of quantum states that have a smaller angle between them. So, you know, if I choose two states like this, then there's a CP map that maps them closer together. Okay, for any pair like that, as long as this angle's smaller than this angle, then there's a CP map that takes you from one to the other. So, you know, if you're not lucky enough to be in one of these special situations, then just use the relevant CP map to get yourself into this situation. Okay, so let's assume that we are in this situation where the angle between the states is of this form. Then what I want to show is that this measurement here fulfills this role. So I want to say that if all of these measurements at the end come out as zero, then you know that the initial state wasn't psi zero, psi zero, psi zero. And I want that, you know, if this comes out 0, 1, 0, then the initial state wasn't psi 0, psi 1, psi 0. So just putting that as an equation, what I want is that so this is the computational basis state that you measure at the end. And then you've got all of those Hadamards. And then you've got that weird R gate. And then you've got okay, and I want it to be that when you get this outcome, you know that it wasn't this state. So in other words, I want the probability, I want this to be zero, right? Because you get the probability by taking the modulus of this squared. So if this is zero, that probability is going to be zero. So to make our lives a bit easier, first thing to notice is that Pauli X, which is this guy, sends 1 to 0. Yeah. Good point.
It's 0, 1, 1, 0. Yes.
Third time lucky, hopefully. Yes. So the identity matrix doesn't do this, but this matrix does swap 1 and 0. So I can actually just put all zeros here as long as I put the right X matrices here. Is it clear what I've done there? So this is, you know, this is like 0, 1, 0, yada, yada, yada. And I'm just saying that's the same as all zeros, but where Pauli X's have been applied to flip the 1s to 0. Okay. And then the next part of our expression is this Hadamard. But if you pull a Hadamard, sorry, if you pull an X through a Hadamard, it turns into a Z. Okay. Where, see if I can get this right. So, you know, you can just check this by matrix multiplication if you haven't seen it before. So that means that on the other side of this Hadamard, if the Hadamard's here, then these X's are going to turn into Z's. And now Z is diagonal in the computational basis, and so is R. So that means they're going to commute. So I can also just pull R through here. But now if you look at how I wrote psi 0 and psi 1, the only difference between them is the sign in front of the 1 there. And the action of the Z matrix is exactly to flip the sign in front of the computational basis state 1, which means that you know, if x0 is 1, then we've got a Z here and we've got a psi 1 here. But that Z is just going to hit that psi 1 and turn it into a psi 0. If if x1 is 0, then we've just got nothing here, and we've got psi 0 there already. So you know, just like the x's we put in here turned an arbitrary computational basis state into the all 0 state, in exactly the same way these z's here take an arbitrary combination of psi 1s and psi 0s and just turn them all into psi 0s. Which means that the thing we were trying to prove at the start just boils down to the special case when all of the x's are 0. Okay.
Sorry, can you go back a step and say how we went from the x's in the raw to the zeros? Like from the top line to the second line.
From this line to this line. Yeah, so I was saying that we can turn this, so this is just some string of zeros and ones. We can turn that into a string of all zeros, provided that we add x operators wherever there were ones in the original string, because an x sends a zero to a one. So this guy gets turned into this guy at the price of having a bunch of x operators after it. And then if you move those to the other side of the Hadamard, they become Zs. And then they commute with the Rs. So they just get through that unscathed.
But the number of Xs you have to add is equal to the number of ones that you had.
Yeah.
Right? Not the total number. So I guess I'm just saying, should that be like the last Z in a tensor product? Should that be Zx and then something other than n? Because it's not necessarily at the end of them.
It's probably, I didn't really explain my notation here. When I write like x to the 1, I mean x. When I write x to the 0, I mean the identity. And similarly, when I write z to the 1, I mean z. And when I write z to the 0, I mean the identity. Right. So all this notation is supposed to represent is z applied to whichever qubits have the relevant x equal to 1.
What Jason was just saying, on the far left,
when
you write 1 with x acting,
That's just 1 too many x.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Hopefully there aren't too many mistakes left there. So this is where it gets a bit messy. The only thing I know to do here is just to actually think what all of those psi zeros are in the computational basis. So there. So n tensor products of psi 0 are just n tensor products of this thing, which means that they are overwriting this. So what I mean by this notation is the number of ones in X. So when you do this tensor product, you know, you're going to get cos theta over 2 to the power n with the all zero state. Then you're going to get cos theta over 2 to the power n minus 1 times sine theta over 2 with 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, so on. So basically, you get one of these for every one in the computational basis state you're interested in, and then you get these for the zeros. And now, if I apply this R business, then I've got remember, all that R did was flip the sign of all zeros. So this gets a minus sign. And then the rest of it is unaffected.
So R is conditioned also on the state of the last qubit?
Yeah, so R, like if you wrote it out as like a big matrix, it would just be minus 1 and then all the rest ones. So literally the only thing it does is flip the sign of the all zero state. Okay, so we've done that. And then probably the easiest way to do it is now to kind of meet in the middle. So so applying the Hadamard to zero gives you an equal superposition of 0 and 1. So if you imagine taking lots of tensor products of that, that means that applying a Hadamard on each qubit to a bunch of qubits that are in a zero state just gives you an equal superposition of all of the computational basis states. So the number that we're hoping to show is 0 is going to be the overlap of an equal superposition of all the computational basis states with this guy. Okay. So in other words, it's just the sum of all the computational basis amplitudes. You know, or that's just like a more complicated version of saying that that an expression like that is just equal. To the sum of those two amplitudes. So what we're actually interested in is just this. And if this was the sum over all the x's rather than all the x's except zero, then this would just be the binomial expansion of this expression. But this also has this, you know, this when this is zero, so we need to subtract that back off. So if I bring those two terms together. Got that? If I pull out a factor of cos theta over 2 to the n, then I've got and then I said that this theta obeyed that equation that tan theta over 2 was 2 to the 1 over n minus 1. So this is that minus that 0, that goes away, 2 minus 2. Okay, so that's shown that, you know, we reduced the thing we were looking for to this special case, and then that's shown that in that special case, you do actually get 0. Everyone vaguely happy with that?
So for the case of just two states and one box, I see how if you have a measurement device that says like not one, it's the other one. But if you have more, I don't understand how, I have not seen how not one, like knowing that it's not one of your states doesn't, or tells you that it's like a single epistemic state, not necessarily a superposition of all the other epistemic states, or all the other, sorry, ontological states.
So you're saying you're happy with n equals 2?
Yeah, but like for n equals 4, let's say.
Yeah.
For, like, yeah, if you have like two boxes. Like if you know that it's not psi 0, psi 0, how do you know that it's not some superposition of the other three basis states? Or why wouldn't that rule out a psi epistemic model?
So for n greater than 2, you need n boxes. Not just the two boxes. And then the argument would go roughly as before. You would say, well, if there's a probability p of getting an ambiguous state from one box, then there's a probability p to the n of getting an ambiguous state from all of the boxes at once. And so if you can do a measurement that can rule out even one of the possible like, sequences of button presses, then you've shown that those ontic states that are possible for all of the combinations of button presses must be impossible. See what I mean? I mean, maybe it would help if I actually just went through the like non-hand wavy version, because it's possible that that's actually easier to understand than the hand wavy version. So the first thing we need is a better number than this vague p to quantify the overlap between two probability distributions. And it turns out that a good number to use is this guy. So if these are two probability distributions, then this is a good way to quantify how much they overlap. And it's just this area here. Okay, so if this number was zero for every pair of quantum states, then it would be a psiontic model. So for a psi epistemic model, this like measure of the overlap is going to have to be non-zero for some pair of states. And now something that was sort of implicit in the hand-wavy version of the argument, but that really needs to be spelled out more clearly, is that is a kind of non-trivial assumption that goes into all of this, which is that if psi zero is represented in your ontological model by some distribution and psi one is represented by some distribution like that, then a product state is just represented by product distributions. Okay, so if you just take the basic definition of an ontological model, there's no requirement that this has to hold. So this is an additional assumption about how independent preparations are modeled in the ontological model that says they're just modeled as independent probability distributions, which, you know, you can have a whole debate about whether that's a sensible assumption or not, but it's the assumption we made. So once you've assumed that your probability distributions are like that, then what you can show is that the overlap of all of the distributions is fact, I think this is actually an equality. So in other words, if these initial two distributions overlap, then when you take lots of products of that distribution, then that whole lot is going to have some common overlap. So the sort of cartoon way to draw this is if you have your two overlapping distributions, and then you take another copy of those two distributions. And now here, imagine I'm like drawing a 2D surface that's given by the product of probabilities here and the product of the probabilities here. So you sort of get a blob coming from the product of these two guys, blob coming from the product of these two guys. So then the existence of this overlap region here guarantees the existence of a region like this where all four of the products are assigning non-zero probability. And then it's this bit here that gets you into trouble when you have a measurement that can rule out one of the preparations. So, you know, just as you can show this, you can also show that if in, if you've got a measurement such that, like the sort of measurement I spent a bit too long describing. So if you've got a measurement where each of the outcomes rules out one of the states, then that implies that in any ontological model that reproduces this measurement, this measure of the overlap between these guys handwriting is getting worse and worse. It's got to be zero. Okay, so running rapidly out of time, but this is the kind of non-hand-wavy version of the thing I said before. It's just that if this being non-zero says that you have these ontic states that are compatible with all of the, it's this region here that's compatible with all of the preparations. But then this is a measurement that can rule out one of the preparations. And it's like five lines to show that that's just in contradiction with the usual equation of that, you know, says that when you integrate out the lambdas, you have to get the operational predictions with quantum theory.
Wait, how does that imply that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I was trying to at least make it plausible that that implies that. Am I supposed to stop now or in 5 minutes? Yeah, maybe I should just prove that. So if I write that first equation in terms of the ontological model, what it means is that I don't really know how Lucien's been denoting an ontological model, but Has he been using like size and muse or anything like that? Okay, let me just stick to P's. So the way you compare an ontological model to quantum mechanics is you look at its operational predictions, which you get by taking the probability of a measurement outcome given an ontic state times the probability of an ontic state given a quantum state, and then integrating through all the ontic states. Right, because that's just going to give you the probability of this measurement outcome given those quantum states. So if this is equal to zero, then it's also going to be true if I just I've completely forgotten how this goes. That's infuriating.
Maybe we can make it a tutorial problem.
Let me see if I can very quickly find it. I had the right idea, I just didn't think it was going to work for some reason. So if this equation is true, then you know this is positive and this is positive. So if I make this number here smaller, it still has to integrate out to zero, right? If you've got something that integrates to zero and then you make it smaller, it's still going to integrate to zero. So that means that I can also say so I've just replaced this number with the minimum of this number over all strings. So the minimum is certainly going to be smaller than that thing. So it's still going to integrate to zero. And now if I, you know, I've got one copy of this equation for each string of x that's here. So if I add up all of those equations, then I've got the sum over x of all of this stuff. But because of the trick I've done here, this no longer depends on x. It's just the sum over x primed. The only place where x appears here is here. So then we're taking the sum over all the outcomes of the probability of the outcome given the ontic state. And it's part of the definition of the ontological model that every ontic state has to give you some outcome for a measurement. So the probabilities when you sum up all the outcomes, the probabilities for any ontic state just have to be one. Okay, so just like the normalization of this probability distribution. So what I've actually just got here is one. And then this thing, 8. And when I add up 0 lots of times, I still get 0. But then this is exactly the definition of the overlap between these probability distributions. Right, it's the integral of the minimum of them. So yeah, that's how you go from the existence of a measurement that does this to the fact that the overlap has to be 0.
Okay, so my main confusion is that, like, so I think you went from like the expression above the arrow, like omega to the n of trace e times size to the top line. Is that true?
So that wasn't what I wanted to happen.
Like implies the top line is 0.
So this.
Yeah.
Is supposed to imply that the top line is equal to 0.
So,
yes.
But isn't the trace of E, shouldn't there be a 1 minus B because it's a knot measurement? Like, what's the ontic state that corresponds to the probability distribution for?
So what I meant here was just the measurement outcome that rules out the string x0 to xn. Right. So in the 2 version, E00 is what I was sort of calling not psi 0. E01 is what I was calling not psi 0, psi 1, so on.
What's landed in? Like, what are the ontic states?
It's any ontological model where the distributions for psi 0 and psi 1 overlap. I'm not saying anything about the nature of it, apart from that. So, I mean, do you understand what this equation is saying? This is saying that within quantum theory, there's a measurement that rules out one of the quantum states. And then all I'm doing is just taking that equation and translating it into the ontological model. Because the assumption is that the ontological model reproduces the assumptions, that reproduces the probabilities of quantum theory.
So this has shown that if there is in fact some hidden variable lambda, there cannot be overlapping distributions ever?
Modulo this, what happened to it? Yeah, this assumption that product states are represented by product probability distributions, then yeah.
Of the lambdas, okay. Right, okay.
Yeah, the only option this leaves is that the overlap was just 0, which is a psi-ontic model.